This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
Good morning. It's good to see everybody here. Just as way of introduction, because most of you don't know who I am, and actually in your bulletin on the back of your outline, you'll see this little picture at the very top, and that's my family. And thought I'd just give you a little intro to who they are. My oldest daughter is named Elia. She's 24 years of age. She is just graduated with her master's in speech pathology. She is married to Craig, who is a wonderful addition to our family, Craig Kirby. My next oldest is my daughter, Courtney. She is 21 years of age. She is a senior at New Mexico State University studying in English. And she likes to tell everybody that she will be the poor one in the family. And she also hopes to be kind of the eccentric aunt that goes around and dotes on all of her nephews and nieces. So that's kind of her goals in life, all right? So, and then my next oldest is Justin, who's 18 years old, and he just started his freshman year in at the University of Washington. He's playing soccer for them, and so he just started camp, and I just got to go see him play in his first game. So how cool is that? So that was fun. And then Jason, who's actually here with us today, is 15, and he will be attending Emerald Ridge and is just fun to have around, likes fun, and loves soccer as well. So we're busy with soccer. And then my wife, Janice, who is also with us this morning, who we have been married for 27 years. And no, I got it wrong. She just shook her head at me. Oops, we'll talk later. Okay, so anyway, I usually always get that too, darn. Anyway, but we have really enjoyed being up here already. We lived up here for 11 years prior to moving to Albuquerque, where we have spent the last 15 years, lived 6 years in Bellingham and 5 years in Snohomish. And so we're very familiar with the Northwest, and we are very excited to be back in the great Northwest. So thank you for having us here. This morning, I would like us to take a look at Joshua chapter 24. And the passage that I will be starting with is a call to commitment that Joshua uses and I think is very appropriate for us to look at as families. Not only nuclear families, but we are also the family of God. And I think what Joshua is calling them to do is important for us to remember. And you're going to hear that word over and over again, remember. And if there's one word I want you to take away from this morning, is remember. And from Joshua 24:14 says, "Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your forefathers worshiped beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods your forefathers served beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." And I really believe that if there is anything that we need to remember as families or the family of God, and is that this commitment to serving the God, serving our God faithfully, serving him with everything that we have in us. Jesus made this statement when he was asked, what are the greatest commandments? He said, the first is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two. And so my desire this weekend is to really look at what Joshua was asking them to commit to, and then specifically see how he asked for this commitment. Because that statement exists in a context. And the context that it exists in is reminding the people of all the stories and everything that has gone before to this point in the lives of the people that he was now saying, I want you to decide for yourselves who you are going to serve. And the reason that that's important is because I do believe that timelines are important. And so timelines are important because it tends to stress people, places, and events. So when we look at, you know, what is a timeline and why is making one important, you know, timelines are not just, you know, something that we, you know, think up, you know, just in a short amount of time. It's actually when we take time to remember the significant people that played significant roles in our lives, to remember events that we were a part of that actually shaped who we are, and then places that we have visited that have actually changed us. You know, just as an example there, you know, when I went to the Philippines, it changed the way that I looked at the world. I couldn't put a finger on exactly what changed in me. I just knew that how I viewed the world had changed significantly. So people, places, and events that change us. And I think really the important thing about timelines is that they remind us of God's faithfulness. They remind us of God's faithfulness because we can look back and we can see how God has worked in our lives. Now, how many of you here today have a Facebook? Okay, this is the time to admit to it, okay? All right? Okay, so now you'll notice I didn't walk up here with an iPad or a phone or anything like that because technology and I, we just don't get along very well, okay? I'm pretty sure if I walked up here with an iPad or a phone or something would explode. Okay. But when we moved up here, I decided that on my Facebook page, I was going to change it from the old version to a new version that they call Timeline. Now, it's not that new, by the way. Okay, it's new for me. But it's not that new. So I changed it to Timeline. And amazingly, when I clicked on it, it just did all the work for me. And it worked. For once, it worked. And it was great because all of a sudden, I could see the events in my life, the people who were contacting me, and, you know, even the places where I've been, all in kind of a timeline of what's taken place over the months. And if you look at my timeline on my Facebook right now, you'll see that in the month of July, the first part of July started off in Canada, spent 10 days with students from this church up in Canada on a mission trip. Then I went back home and picked up Jason and my wife and the rest of my children. We actually moved ourselves up here from New Mexico. Then right after that, I went to Montana with, again, students from here and went to Camp Bighorn, had a great time. And then finally went to Lake Cushman for a weekend retreat. All said and done, drove for 4,000 miles. And then if you add air travel in there, traveled for over 6,000 miles in that 1 month. Now, what was really incredible about that, though, is I looked back at everything. I began to see God's footprints and how he had brought us to this point and to this place. And so this morning, what I want to do is look very closely at Joshua's timeline. Because Joshua gives a timeline at the very beginning of this chapter. And it's this timeline that he uses to say, are you going to serve him? And I'm going to begin in actually chapter 24, verse 2. Joshua said to all the people, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your forefathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham, and Nahor, lived beyond the river and worshiped their gods. But I took your father Abraham from the land beyond the river and led him throughout Canaan and gave him many descendants. I gave him Isaac, and to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. I assigned the hill country of Seir to Esau, but Jacob and his sons went down to Egypt. Then I sent Moses and Aaron, and I afflicted the Egyptians by what I did there, and I brought you out. When I brought your fathers out of Egypt, you came to the sea, and the Egyptians pursued them with chariots and horsemen as far as the Red Sea. But they cried to the Lord for help, and he put darkness between you and the Egyptians. He brought the sea over them and covered them. You saw with your own eyes what I did to the Egyptians. Then you lived in the desert for a long time. And then he goes on to talk about even the conquests that they themselves had experienced. This new generation that came with Joshua, he talked about these victories and things that God had done on their behalf. And what I love about this whole picture is all the people, the places, the events that Joshua details out here are all have stories around each one of them. And as he mentions those names, as he mentions those events and those times, the people that he is speaking to, they start remembering the stories. The stories that they've heard around the campfires. The stories as maybe as the women are cleaning or doing whatever are talking about. Or as the men are out in the fields. Or as they're traveling along, they're hearing these stories about what happened with their forefathers. And so they remember. But not only is he talking about those events that happened long before they were around, but he's also talking about events that they were actually involved in. When he asked them to look at the conquests and the victories and how God delivered them into their hands, he's saying, do you remember what it is that God has done for us? And there is a specific story that I want to detail out even further, because I really believe that this story was very much on the forefront of Joshua's mind when he's asking them to serve God faithfully. And I believe it's one of the stories that helps him with the passion when he says, as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. And it takes place in Numbers 13 and 14, and I'm going to summarize some of it before I dive into a passage there. And in 13 and 14, God tells Moses, I want you to select 12 chiefs of the tribes, and I want them to go into the land that I am sending you and to spy it out and see what's there. And so these 12 chiefs do that. They go into the land. Joshua was one of them. And they are there for 40 days. Now, I have been here just for a little over a month, pretty close to 40 days now, probably. And I can tell you how much area can be seen in 40 days. I have covered everywhere from pretty much Puyallup all the way up to Alaska, and then everything from Albuquerque all the way up to Puyallup. I have seen a lot of land. And I am really glad to be back here in the Northwest, by the way. It is beautiful up here. And they spied out the land for 40 days. And they came back and they basically did the same thing. They said, the land is exactly as God said it would be. It's flowing with milk and honey. In fact, I want you to look at this bunch of grapes. And in come two men. They have a pole between the two of them, and that's how they had to carry a bunch of grapes. Look at how fruitful this land is. And so at this point, I'm sure Joshua is thinking to himself, yeah, let's go. He was ready. But then notice what happens. And I believe this is one of the reasons why he's challenging the people now for commitment. Because in Numbers 13, beginning in 31, it says, we are not able. This is some of the other people who spied out the land, not Joshua or Caleb. We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. So they brought to the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who came from the Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to one another, let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Isn't that so much like human nature? Even when God promises, even when we see it's good, that when we've run up against our first obstacles, or when things look a little bit more scary than what we thought they were going to be, we say, can't we just go back? Can we just stop this and go back? Don't want to do this anymore. And I really believe that that's one of the reasons why Joshua is reminding them about all the things that have happened before. Because he remembers how the people shrank from what God wanted them to do. He had been in the land also, and now he's listening to this bad report that is taking place. And listen to what he and Caleb do. And this is from Numbers 14, 6 through 9. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes and said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, the land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord. And do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. See, one of the things that's important about establishing a timeline and remembering is that I believe that it overcomes fear and can help us step out in faith and boldness. See, Joshua saw all the same things. So did Caleb. He saw everything that everybody else had seen. So what made it different for those two? Now, we don't necessarily have it recorded anywhere, but here's what I believe was true. Joshua and Caleb remembered. Joshua remembered what it was like when Moses showed up when they were still in Egypt. Joshua remembered when Moses was in front of Pharaoh. Joshua remembered how God delivered them out of the Egyptians' hands. He remembered also as they're there at the edge of the Red Sea and they're trapped between the Egyptian army that's coming and the Red Sea, and he remembered very clearly how God parted the Red Sea. He remembered the pillar of fire. He remembered over and over again the provisions that God had made. And there's also one other thing that I think he remembered, and that he remembered what it was like to be a slave. And now he was free. That's the reason why I think Joshua and Caleb came in and they are ripping their clothes. They are passionate about this, and they're hearing these bad reports go on, and they're hearing these people say, let's choose somebody and let's go back to Egypt. And he's ripping his clothes and saying, do you not remember? What are you doing? How can you not go ahead and take this land? I've been in there. I've seen what it's like. Now, don't get me wrong. The people had good reason to be afraid. When they went into this land, they saw fortified cities. They saw armies. They saw chariots. They saw men who looked like giants to them. They had good reason to be afraid. When I was reading through this passage at one point, the Olympics were still taking place. And as I was reading, all of a sudden, the U.S. men's basketball team kind of flashed on there for a minute. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever actually been around a professional basketball player. They're huge. We had a good friend, or some good friends. Their son is actually playing for the Milwaukee Bucks. He played here at the University of Washington. His name was John Brockman. We watched Jonathan grow up. Even as a fifth grader, they had to bring in adult-sized desks and put in the classroom. And my daughter shared a class with him for a little while, and you would go to the classroom door and you would look in, and it looked like this man sitting in there with all these little kids. He was just a big guy. And then as he grew up, I mean, you know, he's 6'8", and he's broad, and his dad was 6'10". And every now and then he'd stand in front of me in church, and he'd stand up, and I'd go, Gordy, you're blocking light. And so, you know, if you've got that picture in your mind of just these tall basketball players, okay, and so that flashed up. And then right after that flashed up the women's gymnastics team. Tiny little girls. Powerful in their own right, but tiny. And I thought that would be a good comparison. It would be like this gymnast team going up to the basketball players and say, we'll play you in a game of basketball. You have this wandering nomad tribe of former slaves going into a land that is fortified and that has trained armies and are used to fighting. They had reason to fear. But see, Joshua's and Caleb's confidence was not in their abilities. Their confidence was in God because they remembered. Our confidence as families is not in our own abilities. Our confidence comes from God. I guarantee you, I will fail my family. But God never will. And my greatest desire is to continue to point my family to the one who will never fail them. After coming to know Jesus as a sophomore in college, that has been my greatest desire and my greatest delight. Is to continue to talk about the love of my Savior and what he has done for me. See, Paul had to remind Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 1. He had to remind him because Timothy was at a point where maybe he was struggling a little bit. And Paul says in 2 Timothy 1, beginning in verse 5, I have been reminded of your sincere faith, which first lived in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice. And I am persuaded now lives in you also. For this reason, I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God, which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. All of us need reminders, because all of us at different times become afraid. In that same letter, in chapter 2, verse 8, Paul says, remember Jesus Christ, raised from the dead, descended from David. This is my gospel. Remember. The last thing I thought I would be doing at my age would be moving again. Uprooting my family. Moving my son Jason, who is a sophomore in high school. And I had worries. Well, what are worries? It's fear. And it's interesting because what did Jesus say about worry? He said, don't do it. And there are times I think, how can you say that to us? There is so much to worry about. You worry about our families, worry about our jobs, we worry about all sorts of things, and yet Jesus says, don't worry. And I believe it's on this premises. Remember Jesus Christ, raised from the dead, descended from David. This is our gospel. If you go back and you look at your own lives and how God has brought you to this point, what need do we have to worry? But did I worry? Yes. Did God over and over again have to ask me, do you trust me? And more importantly, do you trust me with Jason? Now, I would love to be able to sit up here this morning and tell you that I could say honestly, from the depths of my heart, I could say, yes, I trust you. But the fact that I was worrying so much and afraid, I had to say, no, I don't. Please help me with my lack of trust. When was the last time you honestly prayed to God to help you with your lack of trust? It's an honest, sincere prayer that I think all of us feel when we get afraid. And then, which my wife is so good at doing, she wrote an email to all of our friends, and she just kind of detailed out the last month and just explained kind of the kindnesses of God over this last month. And I read through that, and I am reminded of God's faithfulness. I am reminded of how he has brought us to this point. And reminders are powerful for overcoming fear, for overcoming worry, because we see how God has worked in our lives. In Hebrews 12, 1 through 3, the writer of Hebrews says this, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And Paul makes a sandwich here. On one side of the sandwich, he's reminding us of everything that Jesus Christ did for us and what he did On the other half of the sandwich is chapter 11 of Hebrews, which I call the Faith Hall of Fame, in which he details all those same stories that Joshua uses, and he details them out as far as how these men took steps of faith in their lives and how these women took steps of faith. And in the middle of that, he says, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance. The writer of Hebrews is also asking for a commitment, and the way he does it is by reminding us of all that has gone before, reminding us of what Jesus Christ has done. And so please, let's remember, what Joshua is doing here is, this is a call to commitment. This is a call to commitment. And the call to commitment can be a very important use of a timeline. Look, based on all that God has done, everything that has gone before, what are you going to do now? How are you going to take this knowledge of everything that's happened? And now, how are you going to live? See, reminders and timelines are important for reminding us of his faithfulness. Because see, when commitments are made, one becomes an integral part of the timeline. See, Joshua at this point, he's going, for me and my household, we are going to serve the Lord. I want you to be a part of this. I want you to join me in this. And he doesn't want any half-hearted commitment. And to me, it's kind of amazing because in this same chapter, what happens is, you know, he asks for this call to commitment. And everybody in there says, yes, we will serve him. Now, for most of us, if we would have heard that, we would have said, good, we're good. But listen to what Joshua says to them in chapter 24, verse 19. But Joshua said to the people, you are not able to serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm and consume you after having done you good. I remember reading through that. I thought to myself, lighten up, Joshua. They just said they would serve him. But see, Joshua remembers. And he's probably thinking to himself, this isn't happening again. There will be no half-hearted commitment about serving the Lord. Everything that we've been through, the conquest of the land so far, of what we've gone through, I don't want any half-hearted commitments. And so he challenged them. And he continued to challenge them until finally they get to the point and said, Joshua, we will serve him. We will serve him. And Joshua at that point says, okay. Then we're going to make this pile of rocks here. And we're going to plaster it. And we're going to write these words on it. And I'm going to record it in the book of the law to bear witness this day that this is what you have committed to doing. Now, this is not the first time that Joshua had the people assemble a pile of rocks. In Joshua 4, beginning in verse 21, and he said to the people of Israel, when your children ask their father in times to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall let your children know Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. See, these stones act as a reminder. Just like a timeline can act as a reminder, when we look back and we remember all that God has done, Joshua was making sure, I want these people to remember. I love what Donald Miller says in his book, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And he says, I like those scenes in the Bible where God stops people and asks them to build an altar. You'd think he was making them do that for himself. But I don't think God really gets much from looking at piles of rocks. Instead, I think God wanted his people to build altars for their sake, something that would help them remember, something they could look back on and remember the time when they were rescued or they were given grace. Being able to look back and remember helps us to overcome fear, helps us to step out in boldness. And it also reminds us that when we make a commitment, we become a part of the witness of all that God has done. I love to backpack. And one of my favorite places to backpack is in the Wimminuche Wilderness in southwestern Colorado. Gorgeous country, rugged. And one of the things that's wonderful about it is there are many trails that for most of the time you spend the day between 10,000 feet and 12,000 feet on the Continental Divide. And the panoramic views are breathtaking. And every now and then when you get to a high point and you've had to work to get there, maybe a bunch of switchbacks or whatever, you will find a pile of stones. And that's people's desire to say, I want to be remembered that I was here. And I guarantee you, when I get to that point and my lungs are burning and my legs are burning, you better believe I'm putting a rock on there. I want people to know I made it. I got here. And it bears witness that I was here. And Joshua didn't want any half-hearted commitment because he's wanting them to know, you will become a witness. You will become a part of this timeline. And your life bears witness to the faithfulness of God. And it is so important, this idea of witness, because we are passing it on to the next generation. Because we see in Judges chapter 2 what happens, I believe, when probably it's not passed on. In Judges 2, beginning verse 7, and the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua. And all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110 years. And they buried him within the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gash. And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers. And there rose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the people who were around them and bowed down to them. They forgot.
I want to ask you, do your children know your stories of faith? Do your children's children know your stories of faith? Do you remember even the stories, the events, the people, the places that God has used to bring you to this place in your life? It's important for us as a family to hear. It's important for us to know and to share what God has done, because we are a witness. We are a part of this timeline. If you sit here in this room this morning and you proclaim Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, you are an integral part of all that God has done, is doing, and will do. He has given you abilities. He has given you talents. He's given you gifts that make you unique. You are in places that He wants you, in your work, in your neighborhoods, your activities that He wants you to remember. See, this past month I had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with students and adults, and we put together a video that I'd like to show. Over the month of July, I had a chance to spend time with 70, a little over 70 different students from Lighthouse. Students who I found to be passionate about their relationship with God. Students who are still trying to figure it out. But these events, these places, the people will be a part of their timeline. These are the things that as they get older, they will talk about and they will be reminded of how God showed up and used them and worked with them. And one of my hopes is that if you get a chance in this, which I kind of stole from Facebook, that you'll spend some time thinking about who are the people that have been significant in your life? What kind of important events have shaped who you are? Where are the places that you've gone that God has met you significantly and played a part in your spiritual development? But also not to neglect the present. How have you seen God today show up? And then what is he asking you to do? What is he asking you to commit to?
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.